Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. It's 3 o'clock p.m. We are at the Vets Hall in Morro Bay. This is the meeting of the WRFCAC, Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. All six members are in attendance, so we will establish a quorum. Call this meeting to order. We'll have a quick moment of silence. And if we may rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Thank you all for attending and your participation and interest. We will start with any committee member announcements. I'd like to start by welcoming our new member and ask him to say a few words about himself. Doug Rogers to my right. Hello and welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be involved. I have a small manufacturing business. And I've been heavily involved in machinery maintenance and construction and plant engineering and made a lot of my own mistakes and paid for all of them. So I'm very interested in seeing the process that we're working on right now come to a successful conclusion. And I'm also very interested in water recycling. So I'm happy to be here and we'll do the best I can to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. And I would mention that Doug has already met with several city staff, myself, and other people trying to get up to speed and taking tours of the facility as well as some neighboring facilities. So thank you for your efforts, and we look forward to your participation. I'll now open up for public comment for anything not on today's agenda. Is there anybody in the public that would like to speak? Please come forward, state your name, and do we have a sign-in so we have a record, okay? Either sure. Before or after you speak. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name's Robert Davis. I'm speaking today as a private citizen. I want to thank you again for the work that you do. You add great value to the process, and we all appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Red. Anybody else for public comment? Okay. I'll close public comment. And I'm sorry, were there any other announcements from our committee members?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, since we met last time, our selection committee was called down to City Hall. We didn't meet as a group ourselves, but we were asked to interview the project management interviewees. Mm-hmm. Each of us gave our own recommendation on our own to the city manager, and at the time, I believe we were all in favor of John Hollenbeck for the project manager, although the recommendation of the City Council and ultimately the contract with the City Council was to hire Corolla Engineers. I just wanted to report that.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. All right. So we will move on to the consent calendar. Item A1, that's the approval of the minutes of the WRFCAC meeting early January, January 4th of this year. I looked over them. I didn't see any corrections or updates. Has anybody else had any? Okay. Then we would like to approve those minutes. May I have a motion quickly to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as stated.
Thank you. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Motion so carries. Item A1 with Steve and Barbara. Item A2 is the minutes from the following week where we were going over the RFP draft, etc. That was on January 11th, 2018. Any corrections, additions, updates, or typos there to look at? Okay, another motion, please, to approve the minutes.
I make a motion to approve the minutes as stated for the January 11th meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion so carries. So that takes care of the consent calendar, item A1 and A2. Moving right along to the business items, and we only have one today. Item B1, that's the draft environmental impact report, or EIR, commonly referred to. I know we've all had a chance to look over all 573 pages plus 600 pages of appendices. And I understand there's going to be a presentation, so I will turn this over to staff, Mr. Leivick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today we are going to make a presentation on the draft EIR. We have our members of our project team here. We have Dr. Jennifer Jacobus, prime author. I'll make the presentation. With her is Camille Castillo. They're both from ESA, who prepared the EIR. And then we also have John Rickenbach, who is program technical team, working on both environmental and permitting. So the purpose of today's presentation is to make a presentation to the community and encourage questions on the EIR. Ideally, those questions could be in writing. We still have a couple weeks before the draft EIR comments are due. May 18th is when the public comment period closes, so you don't have to come up with every question today, but we will make an attempt to, if they're simple questions, answer them today. If not, we'll take note and answer them in the response to comments in the final EIR. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Jacobus to walk us through the draft EIR.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Pleasure to be here. I'm going to make this brief presentation that will give you an overview of CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act, and the EIR, and then we will open it up for your comments. So this is just an overview of what's part of my presentation. I'm going to describe the purpose of the meeting, CEQA. I know everyone's familiar with the project, but just a brief overview of the project, a review of the impacts that are described in the EIR, and the explanation about the comment period and how you can make comments. So as we've mentioned, the purpose of the meeting is to invite members of the public and stakeholders to provide comments on the content of what's in the draft EIR. So the EIR has been released by the City of Morro Bay as the lead agency of this project for the water reclamation facility. So this a CEQA public meeting is different from a workshop environment where we are really interested in having your comments now on the content of the draft EIR as opposed to comments on the details of the project design and such itself. So, what is CEQA, or the California Quality Act? Just give you a brief overview. It's a California statute that was passed in 1970, and it essentially requires public agencies to evaluate the impacts of their environmental impacts of their projects and to disclose them. So these are sort of highlights of the three main key things that CEQA does. It identifies ways to reduce impacts through mitigation measures and alternatives. It's a decision-making tool. It requires public agencies to consider the impacts of a project prior to approving a project. But the key aspect of it is that it's disclosure. It's disclosure of impacts to the public and to agencies, and we do this through meetings and through documents. So as some of you have seen, for this project, we've prepared an environmental impact report, and the details of the impacts are contained in there. So this graphic gives you just a basic overview of the CEQA process. It has three main components. The green, which we've already completed, was the scoping process. We issued a notice of preparation and had a meeting to take public input about what agencies and stakeholders wanted to see be evaluated in this EIR. And there was a 30-day comment period. Now we're in the blue stage, which is the draft EIR, which has been released. We're having today another public meeting, and the comment period is for 45 days and ends on May 18. Looking ahead, after that comment period is over, and we've collected and received all of the written comments and comments we received today, we'll prepare a written response to comments, which essentially is what is contained in the final EIR. So the draft and the final together are the final documentation, and this is what goes to the City Council for certification. And certification of the EIR itself is not necessarily approval of the process. Just to be clear, the approval is separate from certification of the EIR. Those are two separate actions. Overview of the project, I'm sure everyone here is familiar, but the project is going to provide, currently the current treatment plant provides a blend of primary and secondary treatment for the wastewater produced in the city and in Cayucos. So the proposed project is going to build a new facility that will meet the requirements of the State Water Resources Control Board. It's going to provide tertiary treatment for all of the wastewater produced in the city and potentially surrounding communities. And then the existing wastewater treatment plant is going to be decommissioned and replaced by the new project, the new water reclamation facility, as well as Cayucos is building their own facility as well, since the current treatment plant services both communities. So just set the stage. That's our overview. This provides a regional map showing the general location of the project. The kind of yellowy-orange shading, that's the boundaries of the city. The project is primarily geographically within the city, with the exception of the water reclamation facility site itself, which is in the unincorporated county area. And the blue line shows you the coastal zone. So the entire project is within the boundaries of the coastal zone. And I know that's probably hard for folks to see the details that's on there, but there's the treatment plant. I'll get to that in a second, the components of the project. So the project objectives were refined and adopted by the City Council in 2017 and include various things. I think most importantly for the project is to, like I mentioned, to produce tertiary treated, disinfected wastewater, which is what the facility will provide. It's going to provide wastewater to augment the city's water supply. It'll be designed to minimize impacts from emerging contaminants in the future and to treat them. Also to ensure compatibility with neighboring land uses. The WRF is also going to be completed to ensure economic value with emphasis on minimizing ratepayer and city expense. And then also the progress for project process. Project progress is going to be communicated as well regularly to the community. So these are the objectives of the project. The project components can be broken down into five main areas. The first is treatment for the wastewater, which is provided by the proposed new WRF, the abbreviation for the Water Reclamation Facility. There's some collection components to the project, a new lift station, and a pipeline to convey the wastewater to the new WRF site. There's some distribution facilities that will take the recycled water from the WRF to new groundwater injection wells in the Morrow Valley. And in the EIR, there is a description of two alternative pipeline and injection well areas, and one of the two will be selected in the future, but both are evaluated. Indirect potable reuse is the proposed end use for the tertiary treated recycled water that will be produced at the WRF. And once it's injected into the groundwater, it's going to be pumped back out using existing production wells that already exist in the city. And then ultimately, the existing wastewater treatment plant will be decommissioned as well. So here's a better graphic of the project showing the WRF site in yellow. For collection, there's one of two lift station locations, the pipeline that will bring untreated wastewater up to the WRF is this sort of turquoise dotted line, that's the alignment. The recycled water that will come from the WRF back to one of the two injection well sites may follow that same alignment, or there's another pipeline alignment here shown in red. And then these two polygons show the alternatives for where the injection wells may be located. The existing treatment plant is shown up here. And the existing production wells, where the water will be pumped back out of the groundwater aquifer, are in this general location where the existing treatment plant and lift station are located. So now turning to the contents of the draft EIR and sort of the structure of the environmental impact report itself. It contains an analysis of direct and indirect and cumulative impacts to a suite of environmental resources as required by CEQA, and those are listed here. It also includes an analysis of growth inducement and an alternatives analysis. As you've mentioned, it's a very dense and document that I encourage you all to look through. But today I'm just going to highlight some of the key impacts and the alternatives analysis. So the methodology for determining the environmental impacts can be broken down into four basic steps. The first is to establish what the baseline environmental conditions are for each of those resources that were listed. Then we determine what the impacts are as a result of the construction or operation of the project. Then any regulatory requirements and mitigation measures are taken into consideration. And then a final significance determination is made for each potential impact. And those significance determinations are classified into basically five different classes. A significant and unavoidable impact is one that cannot be reduced to a threshold that's reasonable, below a reasonable threshold with mitigation. A class two impact is significant but mitigable, means there's measures that are available to reduce the potential impact of the project. Class three is not significant, meaning the impact might result in some kind of adverse change, but doesn't exceed a threshold and mitigation's not required. Class four is a beneficial impact that maybe would reduce an environmental problem or hazard. And then there's some potential impacts that where there's just no impact. I wanted to just highlight there's one significant and unavoidable impact potentially identified in the EIR to cultural resources. And this is as a result of ground disturbance during construction of some of the pipelines and wells associated with the project, and potentially some additional ongoing maintenance activities that might require ground disturbance. The potential resource to be impacted includes historical, archaeological, paleontological resources, and human remains, basically buried resources. And there's a large suite of mitigation measures that are included in this in the EIR. First and foremost, the preference is for avoidance of these resources through redesign of the project as the project moves through the design and build process. But in the event that that may not be possible, there's other mitigation measures that require recovery plans, treatment plans, mitigation and monitoring plans in order to try to identify and curate any potential impact, any potential resources that might be encountered as a result of implementing the project. So that's the only significant and unavoidable impact identified in the draft EIR. For the other resources, in bold, I've shown in bold here, there are impacts that are identified that could be potentially significant, but there are measures, mitigation measures, that can be applied to ensure that they're not significant. The ones that aren't in bold, there's no mitigation required for any impacts to those resources. So I just wanted to then also provide an overview of the alternatives analysis. So for CEQA, the alternatives analysis is really plays a similar role to mitigation measures. The purpose is to find alternatives that could feasibly attain most of the basic project objectives and that would also avoid or substantially lessen the project's significant environmental effects. And as I just mentioned, really the only significant unavoidable effect we've identified so far is to cultural resources. Some of the things that are considered when selecting alternatives are the objectives and the environmental effects, but also feasibility. So feasibility is taken into consideration as well when determining what alternatives to consider, again, for purposes of CEQA. And feasibility means capable of being accomplished in a successful manner within a reasonable period of time, taking into account economic, environmental, legal, social, and technical factors. So there's a lot that could go into what's feasible. A lot of work has been done for this project in screening out alternatives before the CEQA process even started. So the alternatives analysis in the EIR does acknowledge all of the work that's been done to date over the years to come to this point and identify a feasible project. So we have provided an overview of, for example, all of the screening that was done to determine the location for the WRF. And at least 17 sites had been considered prior to identifying the project that was evaluated in the EIR. In addition, there was a joint venture between Cayucos and Morro Bay that was considered, as well as a joint venture with Los Osos. So that is described in the EIR. In addition, we provide an overview of previously, the corporation yard was considered to be included at the WRF site, but that's no longer been carried forward into the draft EIR project description. There was also some screening done for the lift station locations. 8 different locations were considered. And there were also other reuse or beneficial end uses that were considered for the recycled water as well in the master water reclamation plan, such as agricultural irrigation and urban irrigation. But there have been previous studies done to consider environmental impacts and other feasibility issues that have already screened out these other locations and end uses for consideration for the project. So that history of the alternative screening is included in the draft EIR. So as far as consideration of full project alternatives, we have 3 in the draft EIR. The first one is the no project alternative, which is required by CEQA. You have to include a no project EIR. And this allows for decision makers to compare the impacts of approving the project with the impacts of not approving the project. In this case, the no project alternative would result in continued operation of the existing wastewater treatment plant where it is now, although there would still be a need to upgrade the plant in order to meet the state's requirements for wastewater treatment and water quality. It would require some floodproofing of the facilities. It also would require a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission. Alternative number two was a pipeline alignment alternative. It's a little hard to see in this graphic, but this is in the EIR. There's a pipeline that goes down along the waterfront here. And so this alternative was considered to see if it was possible to have a pipeline alignment that may have lesser impacts to cultural resources. The outcome was there may be fewer cultural sites that would be impacted, but there would still result in significant impacts. Also, this pipeline alignment would be longer and could potentially result in greater impacts to resources, perhaps air quality and traffic. It also runs through a more developed, since it also runs through a more developed area. And the third project alternative was a design alternative at the WRF site. So the alternative would remove the advanced treatment facilities to see if the size or the footprint or the energy consumption associated with the project could be reduced. The analysis concludes that there's no necessarily guarantee that the footprint could be reduced. There really is no significant unavoidable impacts associated with the WRF site itself, so there's no significant impacts to measurably be reduced. All the same mitigation measures generally would still apply for the project. And one of the key objectives of the project, which is providing recycled water and augmenting water supply, would not be achieved with this alternative. So CEQA requires that the environment an environmentally superior alternative be identified, and it cannot be the no project alternative. The environmentally superior alternative is the one that meets most of the basic project objectives and results in the fewest or least severe combinations of significant environmental impacts. So when comparing the project to all of the feasible alternatives that were identified, the proposed project meets all the objectives, reduces the costs to the city related to construction, and has the least severe impacts to resources, and so has been proposed as the environmentally superior alternative. So turning back to the CEQA process, once the draft EIR comment period ends, like I said, we will be moving into the final EIR stage. We are here to hear your comments today, but we do encourage you to, in addition to put your comments in writing and submit those to us. We will prepare written responses to all the comments that we receive, and those will be part of the final environmental impact report. That EIR, final EIR, will be completed, we're estimating summer, fall of this year, and it must be done at least 10 days prior to the date that the city will consider the EIR for certification. So, again, we have the comment period open until May 18. The draft EIR is available on the city's WRF website, which is shown here. There also are hard copies at the local libraries and also available at City Hall. And Rob Leivick is the contact person to submit your written comments to, and the information is shown here. We also have some comment cards on the back table if you'd like to write down any comments today and hand them to us. They look like this. Or you can just take this with you, and it has all the information on it for you to submit comments. And there's a sign-in sheet here. There is also a sign-in sheet in the back, as well, if you'd like to, if you'd like to provide us with your contact information. And with that, I will turn it back over to Rob.
Thank you, Jennifer. Also want to point out that we have copies at the Public Works office at 955 Shasta for review. There's the electronic files at ASAP Reprographics if anybody would like to have their own copy printed, and they'll print that for cost. Libraries, Cayucas Library, and online. So turn it back to Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for the presentation. So first off, I guess we'd start with some questions or on the presentation, and we may need you to come back up to the podium. Okay. Go ahead,
I'd
Steve.
I'd like to start out, and this is for Dr. Jacobus. And it's, first of all, I've been out of the country for the last month. I physically got this document yesterday, and so I didn't have an opportunity to go through everything, although I did read the executive summary portions of it. And I guess the first question is regarding all the Class 1 unavoidable impacts appear to be cultural only. Is this based on having surveys done that you know these things are physically present in the travel way of the pipeline, or is this just a what if that if it should crop up, these things could happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Thank you. And yes, you'll probably notice there's no appendix with any kind of technical report
I
in the document.
But
there isn't, and that's usually intentional because cultural resources are sensitive and confidential. But no, there have been surveys done. There have been a lot of record searches and database searches done, and field surveys conducted. And there are known resources, and there could be unknown resources as well. But there are definitely known resources within or directly adjacent to the area that's proposed for ground disturbance for the project.
Okay, so it's more of a what if. You're not sure if they'll hit them as they go.
Some of them are sure, some of them aren't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then before, let me see the other one. The Class 2, which were the significant but mitigable, they appeared to me on first blush mainly short-term impacts of construction mm-hmm. and things of that nature. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. And then the third one, this is geared more towards you, Rob, is I noticed in the description, project description, you talk of an IPR East and IPR West fields for the injection back in. Is this an either or are you looking to put in two separate pipelines, two different fields?
It's an either or. We wouldn't
oh,
do
okay.
two separate pipelines.
Oh, okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Steve.
Back up to that map you had on the screen. The red ones. Is that what we're talking about?
Pass. Right there.
Yeah. You had another map with the second red line.
Oh.
I'm not sure which is which.
This?
Yeah.
So.
What are the two red lines?
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I want to get the questions in that. No one else is over the microphone.
This relates to his question.
I haven't opened public comment up yet. We will continue with this, and unless you're agreeable, then the gentleman should step to the stand so we can hear the question.
Name.
Would you like to? So I think the question is, what are the pipelines that are shown in this graphic?
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's a red pipeline that is to the north, if you will, of Highway 1. That's one of the alternative recycled water pipelines that are part of the project. The kind of turquoisey blue dotted one is also part of the project. Then there's a third pipeline that's not showing up very well. That's one of the alternative pipelines in the alternatives analysis. That runs...
It runs down the Embarcadero
down here,
and then up
and
Pacific
along the Embarcadero.
Quintana.
That's not being proposed as part of the project. That's the alternative pipeline alignment.
So the dark red line is the proposed line?
It's one of the alternatives. Alternative project lines, yes.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Jacobus, just real quickly, will this be available on the website, this presentation?
Yes, we can make it available
okay,
on the website.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Okay, I'm sorry. Paul, go ahead, please.
Actually, I have a lot of comments, but I don't think we have time for it. But I really wanted to start with is that any verbal comments made today by the committee or the public, will that be addressed in the final EIR? Somebody will transcribe what's said, or
yes.
How are we going to get that?
Yes, it'll be included in the final EIR. Yes,
okay.
It'll be transcribed.
I want people to be able to get up and speak their mind without having to worry that it didn't get addressed or in somehow this is the time to do it.
Yes, oral comments will also be transcribed or summarized and responded to as well. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, and then one of the first things that I noticed in the draft EIR is the site layout, which is figure 2.4. Which is a lot different than what we've been seeing in the facilities master plan. It says the source of this new figure in the EIR is from the city. I was wondering where this came from.
So this layout was a result of after the peer review to downsize the site layout and meeting with our project management team and most efficiently laying out the site to get to the various treatment areas, buildings, so forth.
In the facilities master plan, it did show rough grading. However, this new exhibit does not, which would be the total area disturbance at the plant site, which I would imagine the EIR would want to speak to. And since the layout looks a lot different than the area of take, the area that we need to acquire for the plan is going to be different as well. Is that to be assumed?
So the site area is smaller than what was addressed in the facilities master plan. It still will involve some grading. I mean, it's not a flat site. I mean, we've talked about this before, that it's the flattest area of the site, but it's definitely not a flat site and will involve ground disturbing activities that will need to be mitigated.
And also reading the section on geology, it's my understanding that you're probably going to encounter the Franciscan formation when you get down below the soil. It's a thin soil later, so you'll be doing rock excavation. Is blasting allowed in this project?
Well, since we're doing a design-build project, we haven't seen that proposed by the contractor. Like I said, we can't answer all the direct questions on the EIR at this point in time.
Well, it's just that you get a very sensitive noise receptor real close there, and that's the Casa de Flores. Also, if you're not going to allow the blasting, then they're going to have to be doing rock excavation with a lot of jackhammering. That noise will be excessive. Right over the hill from, again, a very sensitive noise receptor. I don't know if any of these things were considered in the IR, but the noise coming from just grading that site is going to be noticeable.
Okay, thank you.
You know, and then that rock encountered, then that brings up another concern, not only just for the site development grading, but for the pipelines itself. There'll be a tremendous amount of excess excavated material, and yet I don't see anything in here where it's designated where that might go. And if there's federal involvement in this project, believe me, the federal agencies will want to know the destination of this material and that area that you've taken it to is already cleared environmentally, too, to place it there. Having done the Chora Valley Pipeline as project manager and resident engineer, we encountered that. So that's why we mainly went cross-country to avoid these displacement areas. So if you go into a city street and you put in four pipes, some as large as 16 inches in diameter, you're excavating and displacing a tremendous amount of material, which brings me now to the point of the alignment down the bike path. There's no way that I can see you can put those pipes in that bike path. How are you going to get the pipe delivered to the actual place you're going to put it in when you've got this whole area excavated out, and it's so narrow, then the EIR did not speak of having to replace that bike path with all the paving and trucks coming in and trying to get in there. It's very, very tight and narrow. There's already a city water line in that bike path. There's a large diameter gas line that serves the power plant that crosses that bike path. I don't know if anybody's really stopped to think if whether or not it's possible or feasible to run pipes down that pipe, that bike path. It seems like it's just like, oh, what's going to go here? Believe me, if my experience and working on the Nacimiento Pipeline Project 2, I just don't see it possible. It's going to be a horrendous feat to get in there with trucks, excavators, and open up a trench with all these other utilities and try to put four large diameter pipes in that path. I don't see that possibility of that location. One of the things that the EIR also spoke of, which is contrary to what the NOP spoke to, was the modification of the existing collection system in town. It seems to me, and it could be possibly as a way to maybe even mitigate some of the impacts, like perpetual pumping on the project, is that you can take a large portion of, let's say, the Morro Heights area, reconfigure it to drain gravity down to South Bay Boulevard. It doesn't have to drain all the way down to the new lift stations and then pump back past it all the way back over there, where it could just be gravity down. Then your pumping and energy use at the lift stations can be reduced because the collection system is diverted in a different way. It could be done. I could see the possibility there. Also, the return line that you show on the east side of the freeway, which I was told by one time is that that was not going to be possible. I believe it was Mike Nungley told me that, because it's impossible to cross coastal streams. At least that's what he told me, is that maybe that's possible to look at that in a way that maybe that water, rather than being pumped, that a siphon can carry that water, since the treatment plant at South Boulevard is higher in elevation than where it's got to go back to either in the injection well sites or down to the outfall. So maybe a siphon can carry that and, again, eliminate some energy use and pumping cost. The injection wells. The city was about to do a study on injection wells, but it never did that. And as I recall, the last study that was done was really kind of uncertain whether or not it's even possible there's enough aquifer there to dispose that much material, 600,000 gallons a day, every day, 365 days a year, without it having a severe impact from flooding, from saturation, possible land subsidence. There's all kinds of things that may happen. And whether or not that water will actually be used at the wellhead has to be decided by a lot of other state agencies, State Water Resources Control Board on Water Rights, the Regional Board for Discharging into in the Water, Fishing Game, because it's in the banks of a known stream, the State Department of Health Services to tell us whether or not that water is actually safe to drink once it reaches the wellhead. We don't know all these things. We don't know that this project is actually going to reuse the water. We haven't decided that yet. It hasn't happened. I'm going to let my other colleague speak, and I might follow up on some other questions, but I'd like to get all of my questions in writing to you before the 18th, so I have several, so I'm going to pass the microphone.
Thank you, Paul, for those comments. And yes, if we have time, we certainly want to go back, and I'm glad you're going to follow up in writing. Go ahead, Val.
To address the cultural resources, I think there's something like six identified archaeological sites. I don't know that the consultants actually conducted studies for historic archaeological. But the project affects the archaeological sites in a differential manner depending upon what injection wells, if you're going to go east or if you're going to go west, or the conveyance system, whether you're going to go east, whether you're going to go west. In regards to conveyance, I think that the east alignment certainly has the least potential to affect cultural resources. Should you stay west, I would recommend that we come up with an alternative, design alternative that does not parallel Morro Creek, that goes past Lila Kaiser and on up to Atascadero Road, and then head up to the lift station via Atascadero Road. I think in that instance we could avoid a lot of potential archaeological conflicts. A lot of the work that's based. It's all basically survey-level information and information that has been collected and gleaned from other studies, particularly for sites along Highway 41. It's a rather extensive site and could potentially affect the vicinity of the 141 intersection, the vicinity of Eastwell, of the Eastwell injection sites, etc. So depending upon what alternatives are selected, I think that there's the potential for the development of avoidance measures, and I'm hoping that the consultants, their actual cultural resource consultants, will have the opportunity to work in tandem with the design build team and not have this information filtered through various different planners or whatever, but actually sit down with pen and paper and have a develop a better understanding of what is out there. I think that's all I'll say for right now. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention is when we reviewed the RFP for the design build, contract, there was a significant amount of information in there in regards to proposed mitigation measures that are expected and that would be taken in regards to sensitive resources. One thing in regards to the environmental impact report, it's very much more developed, and maybe Jennifer can address this. I'm assuming that this that you have developed a relationship with the design team, because this is much more expanded than what was in the design build RFP. And the design build team needs to know that there are potential things that could occur in regard, particularly in regards to cultural resources, biology, and biology, that could affect both the cost, the scope, and the schedule of this project. Were they aware of the fact that now we're discussing the potential for a biological opinion for snail? I don't believe that was discussed in the RFP for the design build contractor. So I'm thinking that you must be working together as you've developed this environmental document. And you're very complete, very thorough recommendations, but the design team needs to know what you're recommending.
Yeah, let me...
Go ahead, John.
Sure, thanks. It's a lot of good questions. On the technical side, of course, we're going to respond to those in the EIR. On the process side, on the question of working with the design-build team, keep in mind there is no design-build team yet, but in developing, it's a chicken and egg thing, obviously. The EIR is out in front of that process, but they're going to have to use the EIR as the basis for going forward. They are aware of where it was going as the EIR was being developed, and that was what was put forward in the RFP for the design build. So this obviously expands on that, and it's going to have to come into consideration. And as a team is selected, yes, there'll be a close working relationship with the whole technical staff and the EIR team. But just so you understand the process, it's hard to answer that question, but to be aware that that's something we're thinking about too.
Well, I guess one of the things I'm thinking is that the proposals are going to be coming in relatively soon, and they're going to be basing their costs based upon that information that was originally provided to them in the RFP. And I'm hoping that are the consultants, do they have access to the potential requirements that they're going to be facing?
We've made them aware of the EIR, and they've had it to read since the end of March like everybody else, and I would hope they're going to be responsive to that.
Because like I said, their proposal is going to include a cost estimate, and these things that are in here are going to affect that cost estimate.
Right.
So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was John Rickenbach, if anybody doesn't know him. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks, Val. Doug, did you have any comments at this time?
Thank you. Well, the comment about the overall design of the sewer collection system.
Can't hear you.
All right, thank you. I talked to Joe about the layout of the sewer collection system, and I just think that that would be a very good thing to include in this because, you know, I don't know about the feasibility of what you suggested, Paul, but I have some questions about the lift station, and Joe had described how there's a main collection line that goes along the Embarcadero and into the plant from the rock side of Highway 1, and I just think that that would be something useful in discussion of the pumping of from the 2.75 million gallons a day at the plant, and then the lift station is 7 million gallons a day. So there we're talking about wet water flows, I believe. And I think there should be a discussion on that because I know there's the public is interested in that difference and why is that difference. And I know the city is taking some steps to improve some of the main collection lines, but I have that comment. The other one, of course, is in the summary on future water supply in section 5.6. It's a very strong statement about how it's going to put the city in a much better water position. But in the discussion earlier in the document in section 3.7, it's fairly weak. So I'm not sure why all of a sudden we have this strong statement in the conclusion. And I just like to, I think that should be carried forward into some of the earlier part of the document. Those are two of my key comments right now.
Thanks, Doug. And if you want to follow up in writing with any of this, start Rob, so that it's clear. Any comment on that right now? Or thank you, John.
Sure. Yeah, I'm John Rickenbach, working with the city on the technical team. I just want to make a global statement. I think it'll be most efficient as questions come up that we write them down, and we're really going to, it'll be better for us to respond to those in writing in the final EIR. If there's a really quick answer that we can get that clarifies something, we'll do it, but we'd rather not answer on the fly.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, could the ESA rep come up for a second? Hi. You mentioned that there was some in your presentation that you're going to do some. You know, you got key impacts. It went 1 through 4. Okay. And then toward the end, you mentioned that no project alternative.
Yes.
And then alternative 2, and then alternative 3. But did you say that a no project alternative is not a considered alternative?
It's definitely considered. As far as I think I said, for the conclusions of what is an environmentally superior alternative, CEQA directs that if it turns out that a no project alternative is environmentally superior, you have to choose another one. You can't choose the no project as your quote environmentally superior alternative, according to CEQA. Is that might be what you're asking about?
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That clears that up. Because one of the things that you mentioned in the no project alternatives and some of the issues, in 2004, the Cayuga Sanitary District staff determined that H2S along North Main Street was a result from the Cayuga Sanitary District's lift station 5, and it goes to gravity along that. So they had H2S issues all along North Main Street. The no project alternative at this point in time with Cayugas leaving takes that H2S is basically taken away. It's no longer an issue. However, the other two alternatives that you have, when you put in a lift station, you're going to create, every time you have a lift station, you're going to have H2S just from the cycling of the pumps, right, in your force main. And I noticed that isn't addressed in your EIR. And that's something that I think needs to be looked at as how we're going to deal with that. The other issue, it has to do with, I noticed on the air quality, you referenced the federal EPA, US EPA, and as we know, the current administration is basically kind of gutting the US EPA. However, in California, is becoming a leader. And since we're in California, is a leader in climate change and greenhouse gas issues. And I noticed that this EIR does not address some of the issues that are related to AB 32, SB 32, which is law, and AB 398, which the governor had signed in 2017 to further the reductions. So when we're looking at energy use for lift stations and all that should be mitigated and addressed accordingly in the CIR with the no project alternative.
Thank you. Those are really good comments. We will do that.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, how about if I open it for public comment now? Let's hear if there's any comment from the public on the presentation or the EIR draft report, this agenda item. If so, please come forward, state your name, sign in, and we'll be happy to hear your comments. Anything?
Bart Beckman. We'll sign in.
Okay, welcome, Bart.
I need to go back and make sure that what I'm saying is accurate, but the 17 alternatives that were discussed, I think I'm reasonably familiar with why most were knocked out. As I recall, and that can be corrected, Toro Creek was knocked out because the consultants identified that it was not a site that was available to be purchased, because Chevron was not willing to sell it, so therefore it wasn't a site. That may or may not be true. I will go back and review that. If that is the fact of why that one got knocked out, then for many reasons, Paul's concerns, I think, would be mitigated if we went that way. We're not going up Quintana and stopping people from going to bonds for 6 months or something, plus all the other issues. So anyway, I'm going to go back and look, or possibly a consultant could say, but as I recall, Toro Creek was knocked out because we couldn't buy it. The other advantage is, to me, it's not reasonable that we're going to inject all that water back into those wells. I have no experience whatsoever with how injection works, but it seems like a huge volume. Whereas, again, if we're at Toro Creek, we could potentially work with Cayucas to possibly use whale rock. I know that that's not in place, but that gives us some advantages. So anyway, I will put it in writing, and I will go back and look at the documentation on Toro Creek. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bart. Anyone else for public comment? All right, thank you. I'll close public comment. Staff, any response on anything?
Good comments, and they will all be addressed in response to comments with the final EIR. I think you were going to turn it back over to Paul for some additional comments.
I just have one quick one. I'll
sure,
turn over
go ahead.
To Paul. And it was more the timing. You're looking to close the comment period on May 18th. However, it sounds like you won't have the document ready for certification till almost the fall. Is that correct? I was just wondering why that lapse in time between the time you're closing the public comment period to bring it back to the City Council for certification.
Sure. It's a great question. I think the real answer is it's not going to be the fall. It's going to be the summer. And it really depends on the level of comment and reconfiguration of the document we may need to do. But if it goes pretty smoothly after May 18th, it takes 3 or 4 weeks to turn it into a final. It's late June. We're in late June, early July. That's our target. If we have a lot of work to do, it goes longer than that. But that's what we're hoping to shoot for.
Oh, okay. And the only other one was on the RFP for the design build, when the bids were going to come in. I thought it was going to be in April. I've been gone, so I wasn't aware. Did it move to early May?
We issued an addendum to have the proposals come back at May 8th.
Oh, okay. So on May 8th,
couple more days.
We'll find out the proof of the pudding.
Exactly.
How much this dude's going to cost. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I really only had one more comment, and it had to do with the decommissioning of the existing wastewater treatment plant. So on page 2-30, it has a couple of bulleted items here. One of the sixth bullet says, upon completion of demolition work and upgrades to facilities which are to remain, the site will be graded to fit the basic drainage pattern of the surrounding facility and be surfaced with a thin layer of gravel. I believe that came right out of the facilities master plan. But in speaking with Stephen Kahn at the California Coastal Commission staff, that's unacceptable. He really wants to know what's that going to look like. He'd like to see some sort of restoration plan, a rehabilitation plan, you know, the area going with some, like, dune grass like they did at the dune restoration over here by the rock years ago. They don't want to just look like an old abandoned parking lot with gravel on it, with weeds growing on it. They want to see something happen to that property. And it's not going to be a Holiday Inn. Believe me, after what Commissioner Kinsey said, it's not going to happen. And we've already identified it with all these flooding hazards, tsunami hazards, and you name it, that property is radioactive. So really, we need to demonstrate, as an environmental kind of a stewardship, that we're going to take that property and make it into something that is compatible with what you like, the dunes that are over here with dune grass and maybe a couple paths through there. It could also, and we in discussing with Kevin, is that maybe it could be used somehow to alleviate some of the drainage flooding in that area as like a flooding detention pond, in which I understand would require further excavation, and it's already a sensitive cultural site. But these ideas are what the coastal staff is coming from. And it seems like since we've been stirred so much by what Coastal's thinking up in Santa Cruz, that this is another one. They really want to know what's going to happen to that property. What's it going to look like when it's all said and done? That's part of what we have to do.
Thanks, Paul. Val?
I've had this question and concern for a while, and it has to do with consultation. This is the first time I've ever worked on a SWECA Plus project, and the US EPA is responsible for the federal compliance. And the State Water Resources Control Board will be responsible for consulting with the federal agencies, particularly for, I'm most concerned about the cultural and the biology. And under cultural, I don't know if anyone working on this project has notified the SHPO, other than the first letter that went out, the State Office of Historic Preservation or the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and the direction that this particular project is going. And when I read the report, and we have very detailed things that we're going to do, and as soon as we get a final design, we're going to go out and hit the ground, and we're going to do more surveys, and if need be, we'll do excavations, and then we'll do evaluations and make recommendations and what have you. But apparently this document is supposed to be used, along with the cultural reports that are not accessible to the general public, for federal clearance. And I'm just wondering if you've allowed enough time for that process to occur. I've worked on projects where we have had an adverse effect to human remains, human burials, and those consultations can go on for more than a couple of weeks. It can go on for a year. It can go on for quite significant amount of time. And it doesn't seem like between when you say that once the design is completed, then we'll get the archaeologists out there and we'll get our Native American representatives will be involved, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have enough time to actually do what we're supposed to be doing in regards to consultation? And what we have in this document, are we convinced or do we feel comfortable that this is going to be that what the SHPO, State Office of Historic Preservation, and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation is expecting and would approve? And basically what it's doing, what we're recommending, is that we turn over the decision-making to the city of Morro Bay. So, and I guess I'm curious, as Jennifer or John, have you ever worked on a project where you're coming forward and you're saying you're having an adverse effect on human remains?
We'll answer that second question easily. Yes, is the answer. And it really depends on a lot of things. Can you avoid? What are the alternatives and so forth? But has it happened? Yes, that's happened. Jennifer could probably say the same thing. On the federal consultation question, that's a really important question. In working through with US EPA, on the WIFIA alone in particular, we've tried to bring them along as we've put this together. Their staff is ultimately going to be handling the clearance. What they want from us is this EIR. They want the technical information in there, but they're going to be doing that themselves. That's sort of the basic message. Just a little back and forth on that. And it may or may not, you know, it's a little bit of a black box on the timing. We understand that. They haven't provided anything that indicates an obstacle procedurally yet, but once they read it, we expect if there's a problem, we're going to be getting a letter from them. We'll be getting a letter from whoever's concerned. It could be the Coastal Commission, LAFCO, a lot of agencies. So some of the concerns all of you are raising, we might expect to hear those directly from the agencies that are going to be most concerned. How that affects the timing, it's unclear right now. And if it does, then it does. But we're planning to a path that gets us there as fast as we can, knowing we may have to make changes in that path. It's possible.
So I understand that their staff would be getting this clearance for this. I understand their staff will be moving forward and getting the clearance for this project. I'm just curious as to, my concern is, will that clearance occur within the time frame that we have allocated for ourselves to basically start work?
We hope it does. We think it does. The indications from staff are that it should, but we also were talking with them before the draft EIR was fully released, and we expect to hear from them and hope to shed light on that question in the next 3 weeks, at least internally, because we'll be getting that kind of feedback from them because of this EIR and its contents. So, yes, and so I think in the broader picture, we have a schedule. We're trying to maintain to that. It requires a lot of things to happen simultaneously. We're trying to account for all the variables, and you never can. And so we're doing what we can, but we'll know a little bit better in a few weeks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, John.
Could I
go ahead. Sure,
can
Richard.
Can I ask John while you're up there? Did you help with the WIFIA loan application, writing that up?
Only to the extent that there is a package, there's an environmental package that goes with that. But really, the main part of the loan that was really handled through other, you know, Kestrel, Nunley, and so forth. But I was part of the team that helped consult with the WIFIA folks, the EPA folks.
Okay, because you know, in that document, it stated that the current wastewater treatment plant is polluting the estuary. And the outfall, as you know, is outside in the sterile bay. Your build team has already eliminated any possibility of exfiltrating sewage from our collection line. Can you explain to me how our outfall is polluting the back bay?
I'm not in a position to explain that right here. I think, and Rob, you may want to add to this, but right, it's a good point to raise. I think we want to be aware of that as we respond to comments. But we'll make a note of that and try to address that. Rob, anything else you want to add?
So the when we prepared the WIFIA letter of interest, we mentioned that the Morro Bay is adjacent to the Morro Bay estuary. We didn't say that the outfall discharge to the estuary. We said it discharged to Estero Bay.
Yeah.
Now, when EPA wrote their fact sheet, they were working with them to correct that. They misinterpreted that we discharged to the estuary. That was written in their fact sheet, not in our letter of interest.
Yeah, but you also stated that in there that you that there the treatment plant is polluting the back bay. You stated that in your application letter. And I'm just wondering if, you know, there's people wondering now that if it's been our outfall that's been polluting the back bay all this time, maybe Los Osos leaky septic tanks weren't the issue, but our outfall. Because it's confusing, especially if the fact that you are you yourself said that you're not considering exfiltrating sewage from our sewer collection lines.
We'll look at that. It's a good point to raise. It's important.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Val.
Real close.
In the demolition of the existing plant, it's not, I can't find anywhere where it's discussed that requires that it be demolished and that that within any particular time frame. Are we on board with the CSD and Morro Bay coming up with a plan that they, because we would need their money to help demolish the plant. So is there a time frame that we need to be working under? That's for Rob. And are there requirements that if we establish a time frame that CSD kick in as well?
The time frame will be addressed in the our agreement with the CSD for demolition, where we jointly own the land and the facility. There's nothing that severed that agreement regarding ownership or demolition of the facility. So it's will be addressed in a separate process outside of the EIR. We still have to have that conversation with the CSD and haven't had a meeting in a while with them.
Missing from the environmental document that might be useful for the reader so they understand how that process would work.
Valerie, if I'm not mistaken, I think Cayucas' EIR stated that that in their opinion, with them leaving, there's no need for us, for Morro Bay, to move the plant, and they're not willing to pay anything for demolition, as far as I think that's what...
In their EIR.
Okay.
One other really minor thing that I read several times in the document in regards to the injection wells and reference to the property for the injection wells, it was stated that the injection wells would be located on city-owned property, city land, and I know that some of the injection wells under consideration are in the, is it called Mobile Shores, or the Mobile Home Park. Is that city land? And I don't know if it was a typo, but it happened more than once.
The RV park on the west side of the highway that's adjacent to the beach there, is that the...
I think it was in reference to the... actually, the east side.
The east side?
Unless I got confused with something on the west side. But it's, when I was reading it, it sounded like the east side.
Really, the... There, I don't know of any city property in those mobile home parks. They're privately owned, so we'll need to clarify that.
When I do my comments, I'll flag all those areas that I saw. Yeah.
That'd be good.
I have one last thing, since we're wrapping this up, is that now that we've identified that there will be Class 1 impacts, the city will then have to make a statement of overriding considerations finding to say why it's okay to do that as opposed to something else that would not do that. And it seems like we've been put in this position because of another state agency. It's kind of odd to think that a state agency would cause a municipality as small as Morro Bay to cause a Class 1 environmental impact. I don't get it. But nonetheless, would we have any idea what kind of statement or findings we might make to justify the Class 1 impact? Do we know that now?
I'm going to leave that to the experts out there.
Right. It's a good point. I think, and for the public's knowledge, the idea of a statement of overriding consideration for Class 1 impacts, a lead agency can approve any project at once, no matter how many impacts there are. You just have to make findings and a statement of overriding considerations that, because of all these other things, it more than balances the environmental impacts that remain. That's the concept. So what goes into a statement like that? It's whatever you want. It's non-environmental issues, economic, social, other issues. So the idea would be the council would have to make a finding to say, we're going to do this project anyway, in spite of, in this case, the Class 1 impacts related to cultural resources, because of its need for improving water quality, for its need for augmenting water supply, because of other economic or social considerations. I'm just riffing off the top of my head, but that's where it has to go, and then the decision is made, is it worth it? And then you make a decision. That's how it works. Thanks.
Thank you. Good explanation. Okay, do we have any other... Right, so we'll close this item, but in summary, thank you all for your comments, and then we will make sure that we follow up with all our questions and our comments in writing to Rob Livick there, or anything that was on the papers, if you took a hard copy in the back and want to send it that way. Go ahead, Rob.
Correct.
By May 18th.
Yes, May 18th is the deadline for public comment, so even if you didn't make anything here, or you thought of something else, please get those comments to us prior to that date. And
in writing.
In writing. They'll be included in the final EIR. And just want to point out that we're still trying to schedule the next WRFCAC meeting. The regular scheduled meeting occurs on Election Day. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to avoid that. So Jeanine will probably be polling the board for an acceptable alternative.
Okay, thank you. So basically, we will not meet, at least not June 5th, in this location. We know that there's an election here, precinct here.
I don't think there's a precinct here, but just to avoid the conflict.
There is.
Oh, there is.
I'm an inspector.
Okay.
We are here. Oh. So, yes.
Rob, real quick, what are we doing about the vacancy on our board?
I believe the clerk is going to re-advertise that position.
That's correct. Okay, thank you. All right, any closing comments from our members? All right, then thank you all for your participation and attendance. We'll adjourn the meeting at 4:19 and look forward to the next meeting. Thank you all.
But what makes the difference is this, the because it's not just a stylus. It has Bluetooth. That's what really makes it. So that's what really makes the difference. I have another program that I used for a long time back in the day called Notes Plus, but it's been crashing on the Pro. It doesn't crash on the Pro.
I don't get the Pro,
but it crashes.
It's worth the time that I use it.
I like it better, but I just can't get it to work with the system. And I may just need to reinstall it. This one's called GoodNotes, this one that I use. Notes Plus. So what you can do, I just discovered this.